Chapter 6. Obi-Wan is kissing Anakin. He has one hand fisted tightly in her hair, the other curved around her waist, with his mouth open and eager against hers. Obi-Wan slides her tongue against his, their teeth clashing briefly together before she adjusts the angle, her head tipped back to accommodate Anakin's height. His Padawan braid tickles her shoulder, and she curls her hand around it, possessive. He grins against her mouth. "I love you." "I know," Obi-Wan says, shuddering as he moves his mouth to her neck, his fingers pressing shyly against the strip of skin between her trousers and her loose undershirt. She feels the question in the Force and murmurs back assent, helping Anakin get her shirt off. He's seen her naked or nearly naked 1,000 times before, so there's nothing new to see, except that this time he's looking at her with intent, sliding his fingers curiously up her abdomen to the underside of her breasts. His hands are a lot bigger than Obi-Wan remembers them being from hand-to-hand sparring practice, spanning the small of her back easily. He dips his mouth to her collarbone and licks it, decisively, making Obi-Wan laugh. Anakin gives her a hurt look, and Obi-Wan uses her grip on his braid to tilt his head up for another biting kiss, light and teasing. He's lost his own shirt somewhere along the way. Obi-Wan takes advantage of this to run her hands up the expanse of tanned skin, feeling the muscle underneath, a few scars from blaster shots and glancing lightsaber blows. Anakin shivers beneath her touch, letting Obi-Wan push him down onto the bed and lean down to kiss him again, her hair falling in a red veil on either side of them, closing them off from the rest of the world. His hands settle comfortably on her waist, steady and familiar, the one flesh and the other body-warm durasteel. Obi-Wan smiles and kisses him again, insistent, their bodies pressed together as their still-clothed legs tangle, the sheets rumbling beneath them. She closes her eyes, Anakin rolling them over with his hands closing decisively on her wrists. He nuzzles her neck, her shoulder, her breasts, his beard scratching a little at the soft skin, and she makes a soft sound of bemused protest, trying to get her hands free. His grip tightens, pressing her down against the bed, and moves his mouth up against hers again, his tongue plunging in demandingly. Obi-Wan shudders, her hips moving up against his. It's the lightsaber calluses, or lack thereof, rather, that tell her something is wrong, not the beard. Anakin's right hand is durasteel. He shouldn't have calluses there. Obi-Wan opens her eyes. Dooku, not Anakin, is pinning her to the bed, kissing her deeply. Obi-Wan panics. Wants to panic, wants to push him away and call her lightsaber into her hand, but while her mind is teetering on the edge of hysteria, her body is responding to Dooku's caresses. She hears herself moan as he frees her hands, reaching down to remove her brassiere, helping him get her trousers off. Some distant part of her mind notes that they're black rather than her usual off-white. Her discarded shirt is black as well. Dooku kisses his way down her body, lingering at her now bare breasts without any of Anakin's shy hesitation. Obi-Wan's hands fold themselves into his hair, encouraging him as he presses kisses against her belly, hooking his fingers into her underwear. While Obi-Wan's mind screams terrified protest, her hips are arching themselves off so that he can peel her underwear off. His beard scratches against her skin as he presses a kiss to her thigh, against the scar he'd made at the Battle of Geonosis. She fists her hands in the sheets, her head falling back, and when she looks up again, it's not Dooku kneeling between her thighs, but Darth Maul, his teeth bared in a grin beneath his red and black features. Obi-Wan screams. She fights her way up out of a tangle of sheets, the remnants of the scream still trembling on her lips as Anakin throws himself up out of his own bed towards her. "Master, what is it? Are you all right?" She scrubs her hands furiously across her mouth, across her clothed thighs, and finally forces them to shuddering stillness. "I'm fine," she manages. Anakin's hands hover worriedly over her. "You haven't done that in years," he says finally. For years after Qui-Gon had died, Obi-Wan had had nightmares about the duel in Theed. She knows she should have exorcised Maul's ghost when she killed him, but he'd haunted her dreams anyway. 1,000 ways the duel could have gone. Better, worse, the same, over and over again. She'd thought that they had finally passed. She twists her single long braid around her wrist, remembering how the dream had begun and not wanting to meet his eyes. "It's nothing." It didn't sound like nothing. "I'm fine," Obi-Wan says, glancing up as the door slides open. "It was only a nightmare." "Your nightmare's just beginning, Kenobi," Tholskor announces, standing aside as Dooku comes in, followed by Quinlan Vos. Obi-Wan and Anakin turn towards them, Obi-Wan calling the syringe into her hand and slipping it quickly into her pocket. She doesn't think any of the others notice, and covers the movement by reaching down to pull her boots on. "What do you want?" Anakin demands, shifting into a defensive position. Dooku ignores him. "General Fisto's fleet has been in orbit around Dak for 2 weeks now," he announces. "Several hours ago, his fleet went into hyperspace and vanished. General Choi's fleet was diverted en route to Poltara and has also vanished. Where are they, General Kenobi?" "I don't know," Obi-Wan says calmly, even though her heart leaps at the words. "I've been here for the past several days. It's possible that new intelligence came in that I haven't been privy to as your prisoner." "Where are Kit Fisto and Sweet Choi, General?" "I don't know," she repeats. "Aayla Secura, Adi Gallia, Shan Jaisal, and Stas Ali have also left their commands. Apparently at the order of the Jedi Council," Dooku goes on. "Where are they?" "I don't know," Obi-Wan says decisively. "And if I did, I wouldn't tell you. I am wondering about your sources, though." Dooku tips his head towards Skor. "Time's up, General Kenobi. Take them both down to interrogation." Skor grins, showing his teeth. "With pleasure, Master." He jerks Obi-Wan to her feet, pulling her arms around behind her back to cuff them. Quinlan does the same with Anakin, and the two of them are propelled out into the hallway, where an escort of battle droids and 2 Magna Guards are waiting. Dooku follows them down the corridor to an elevator. "You can still save your Padawan, Master Kenobi. Tell me what you know of the Republic's plans."
"No."
"What about you, Skywalker?"
"No," Anakin says, flatly.
"I see we'll have to use an alternative means of persuasion," Dooku remarks, as they wait for the elevator.
"You won't get anything out of us, Dooku," Anakin snaps. "We're Jedi. We're trained to resist torture."
"That will just make this more fun," Skor sneers.
Quinlan, Obi-Wan notices, doesn't say anything at all. His face is completely expressionless, and Obi-Wan wonders if he even has an opinion on the subject. If Aayla's with the fleet that she sure has been sent to intercept them, then she'll be able to reach him. Aayla Secura had been Quinlan's Padawan. They're as close as any former master and Padawan that Obi-Wan knows, and closer than most. The elevator dings open, a rather incongruous sound in the midst of a warship, and the droids steer Anakin and Obi-Wan inside, followed by Vos, Skor, and Dooku. It's a tight fit.
Obi-Wan might have tried to go for Skor's lightsaber if Dooku hadn't been there. But 2 against 3 plus the droids aren't good odds, even for the Jedi. Even for her and Anakin. She watches the elevator tick downwards, Anakin restless and tense at her shoulder. She can feel the force gathered close around her, hopes that it's tucked carefully enough beneath her skin that Dooku or the others won't notice anything amiss. The syringe, with a capped hypodermic needle attached, is a lightweight in her pocket. Obi-Wan is waiting for the Force to tell her when to use it. She'd helped Anakin purge the drug from his system last night after the med droid had left, both of them in trance so that he could use the little bit of the Force still left to him to free the remainder of it. For all that he's mad and a little reckless, all right, extremely reckless, Anakin has more combat skill than knights twice his age. And Obi-Wan is certain that she and he together are perfectly capable of taking on Voss and Skor, with or without their lightsabers. Dooku, well, to go up against Dooku, they're going to want lightsabers. Eventually, the elevator deposits them into a corridor that looks exactly the same as the one they'd just left. They're steered right, the droids in formation around them and Skor leading the way. Voss striding alongside Obi-Wan and Dooku following them, his gaze hard on the back of Obi-Wan's neck, sharp with the Force. They've been walking for 5 minutes when the entire ship shakes, and Dooku's comlink makes an urgent sound. He flicks it on and barks, "Why have we just left hyperspace? We're still hours away from Sereno!" before the droid on the other end can get more than a few syllables out.
"Sir, a Republic fleet has just intercepted us,"
the droid says.
"We were forced out of hyperspace to avoid a collision. They've left hyperspace as well and are now moving to surround us. Orders, sir?"
Dooku turns on Obi-Wan. "How did you do this?" he demands. Obi-Wan just smiles. "I think I've found Kit Fisto and his fleet for you." For a heartbeat, she thinks he's going to strike her. Force lightning glitters at his fingertips. Obi-Wan draws in her breath, trying to prepare herself to absorb it if she has to. But instead, Dooku drops his hand and strides away, calling over his shoulder, "Secure these two and meet me on the bridge." "Yes, master," Skor says. To the droids, he says, "You heard him. Get moving." They start walking again. Anakin says, "You know that the Jedi are coming for us." "Shut up, Skywalker," he snaps. "They're coming, and when they get here, you're going to be arrested and tried for high treason, which, trust me, you're not going to enjoy," Anakin says, getting into the swing of things. "You used to be a Jedi, so you'll be tried by the Jedi Council for crimes against civilization. We don't deal too kindly on that these days. You probably think the Jedi are weak, so it might not seem like much of a threat, but..." "Shut up, Skywalker," Skor says, whirling on him and raising his hand to strike. "Stop it," Quinlan says, grabbing his wrist. "The Count said to take them to holding, so that's what we'll do. We..." The comm system on the ship crackles. All of them, droids included, look up as a familiar voice comes over the intercom.
"This is Jedi General Kit Fisto. We have you surrounded. You are ordered to immediately surrender and prepare to be boarded. Release the prisoners General Obi-Wan Kenobi and Commander Anakin Skywalker."
Anakin is kept from snapping "Ha!" in Skor's face, only by Obi-Wan nudging him with the Force. She turns her attention on the dark Jedi and says, "Release us, and I'll speak for you before the Council of Reconciliation." He sneers at her.
"No."
"You heard General Fisto. The Republic has this ship surrounded. You won't be able to make a break for hyperspace. You were a Jedi once, Skor. You know what it's like to touch serenity. You can still come back from the dark side. I can sense it. You..."
"Keep walking, Kenobi."
He unhooks his lightsaber from his belt. Dooku said he wanted you alive, but he didn't say anything about it being in one piece. The droids titter uncertainly, looking around for orders. Quinn tries to push Skor's arm away. This isn't the time. Quinn, Obi-Wan says, we've always been friends. You don't have to follow Dooku. You're still a Jedi. You can come back. Don't listen to the bitch, Voss, Skor snaps, igniting his lightsaber. If you fall for that, you're as weak as I always thought you were. Quinlan glances at him, taking his lightsaber off his belt. Skor. I felt it inside you yesterday, Quinn, Obi-Wan says, talking quickly to cover the sound of Skor's rebuttals. You don't have to follow Dooku. You don't have to follow the path he's chosen. The dark side of the Force does not rule you. I don't know why you joined the Confederacy, but it can't be worth your soul. No one will make you fight for the Republic, Quinn. Just don't do this for Dooku. Think about what you're being asked to do. Torture a Jedi. Torture a Padawan. You are not that man, Quinn. I know you. And I know there is no evil in your spirit. His lightsaber moves blindingly fast, a figure eight of flashing red that burns across Obi-Wan's vision even after her binders have fallen off her wrists. Skor shouts in rage, but she's already moving, her heels snapping up against his chin and sending him into a backflip as droids scatter. Quinn and Anakin, his binders cut, are moving amongst them, leaving scrap metal in their wake. Obi-Wan ducks Skor's swing, kicking aside his saber arm and angling a punch against his jaw. He blocks it, his lightsaber swinging back towards her, and Obi-Wan flings herself backwards, turning head over heels in midair and landing flat-footed, her fists up in preparation. Skor swings his lightsaber around, striding towards her, and Obi-Wan launches herself off the floor, bouncing sideways off the wall to slam her right foot against his jaw, sending him sprawling sideways briefly before he recovers himself. Obi-Wan bounces back to her feet, already moving upwards with another kick that slides in past his guard and shoves him back a step before he recovers. He shouts and thrusts at her. Instinct makes Obi-Wan throw her hand out, the Force sending him sprawling backwards amongst the droid parts as Anakin batters a battle droid to scrap with his bare hands and Quinn duels with a Magna Guard. Skor flips back on his feet, face twisted in hatred as he advances again, his free hand rising and closing into a fist. The Force lifts her up off her feet, toes barely skimming the floor as Obi-Wan scrambles a hand at her throat, struggling to breathe past the grasp of the Force around her. She flings her hand out, which makes the grasp loosen as Skor puts his energy towards blocking her. Both their palms flatten in thin air, the Force struggling between them and bowing out the walls on either side of them. Skor's lightsaber deactivates, unnecessary at the moment. Obi-Wan is stronger in the Force than he is naturally, but he has the dark side. Obi-Wan has serenity, and she reaches for it, lets the Force flow through her as she reaches out again, closes her fist, and twists. Skor shouts and collapses, the pressure between them gone. You bitch! He shouts as Obi-Wan approaches, his voice echoing through the long middle corridor. Neither his hands nor his legs move, unprotesting, as she stretches her hand out and calls his lightsaber to her. So you do have a dark side. Anakin shoots the last battle droid in the head with a stolen blaster, just as Quinn slices the second Magna Guard in two. What did you do? Anakin demands, looking down at Skor. I broke his spine, Obi-Wan says, and spares a fleeting worry for how close that is to what darksiders do. He'll live to face trial, but he'll never hold a lightsaber again. You Jedi witch! Anakin kneels down and presses a finger to his forehead. Sleep, he orders, the Force behind it. Skor's eyes close immediately. How did you know I'd help you? Quinn asks, deactivating his lightsaber. Obi-Wan smiles at him. I suppose I just had faith, she says. She glances around at the wreckage in the hallway. Kit and the others are on their way, she says, unnecessarily. Quinn, go secure the hangar base for them. See if you can get on the comm to Master Fisto, or Master Secura, and let them know the situation. Anakin, Find the droid control chamber and deactivate the battle droids and vulture droids. Try and find our lightsabers.
I think being a general has gone to your head, Quinn says lightly.
Where are you going? Anakin demands, more urgently. Obi-Wan raises Score's lightsaber. It's bigger and a little heavier than hers is, designed for a man's hands, but none of that really matters. She's trained with Anakin's lightsaber before, and it had been Qui-Gon's that she'd used to kill Maul. It's far better than no lightsaber at all. I'm going after Dooku, she says. Anakin, who after nearly 12 years as her Padawan still lacks a certain amount of respect for her position as his master, tells her that she's insane. She can't possibly mean to go after Dooku on her own. Then he adds something about Asajj Ventress. Ventress left, Quinlan informs them, swinging his lightsaber hilt idly in his hand as they walk back towards the elevator. Dooku sent her after some weapons manufacturer on Geonosis.
You don't have a lightsaber, Obi-Wan tells Anakin.
I can take... Quinn's hand closes decisively on his lightsaber.
No, you can't.
Obi-Wan, your Padawan is right. All I'm going to do is keep him from running long enough for Kit and the others to get here and arrest him, Obi-Wan says. Which will be easier if we stop delaying. She jabs impatiently at the elevator controls.
The last time you dueled with Dooku, he would have killed you if I wasn't there, Anakin tries again.
The elevator arrives, and the three of them step inside, Anakin's hand closing on Obi-Wan's sleeve as Quinn hits the controls.
Let me come with you, he orders. You need me.
I need you to disable the vulture droids so the boarding party can land, Obi-Wan says, all too aware of Quinlan's curious gaze on them as the elevator shoots upwards.
We don't have much time. The fleet will...
The starship shudders as a hit makes it through the shields.
We'll try and disable the hyperdrive, but they don't want to destroy the ship unless they have to. Not with three Jedi and Count Dooku aboard. So you have to make sure the boarding party can make it through. Obi-Wan finishes, putting her hand against the wall to catch her balance as the ship shakes again.
Master Voss can do that, Anakin argues. You're still hurt.
And you don't have a lightsaber, Obi-Wan snaps.
I've got a blaster, he says, hefting it.
You know, you two argued a whole lot less when we were out on the rim together before the war, Quinlan observes.
I like to pretend my Padawan respected me then, Obi-Wan grumbles, glancing at the elevator controls.
I respect you, Anakin protests.
He sets his mouth stubbornly, and his voice goes soft as he adds, The last time I let you out of my sight during a battle, I spent 3 weeks thinking you were dead, and you spent 3 weeks chained to Asajj Ventress's ceiling. And I can't do that again.
Obi-Wan really wishes that Quinlan was anywhere else in the galaxy right now.
She's saved from Anakin making another declaration of undying passion. In front of a witness who's perfectly capable of testifying in front of the Jedi Council this time. By the elevator coming to a stop, the door sliding open. Obi-Wan launches herself out of it and uses the Force to close the doors before Anakin can follow her.
And just like that, she's alone on Count Dooku's battlecruiser.
Score's lightsaber hilt is warm against her palm. Obi-Wan grips it tightly, closing her eyes and reaching out with the Force to find Dooku. There are droids between them. Battle droids, coming towards her. Obi-Wan doesn't know if they've been sent to recapture her or not. Doesn't particularly care. She ignites Score's lightsaber, the red blade sending strange shadows sliding across the floor in front of her, and steps out into the corridor.
There she is,
cries a battle droid.
Set for stun and shoot her.
Obi-Wan deflects the bolts easily. Deflected stun blasts don't have any effect on droids, unfortunately, but that doesn't matter. Obi-Wan throws the lightsaber and tosses herself into a backflip, blaster bolts skimming beneath her until she lands back on her feet, the hilt of Score's lightsaber thudding solidly back into her palm. 6 battle droids collapse in disassembled parts on the floor. The 7th squawks an alarm and takes off down the hallway, Obi-Wan in hot pursuit. She slices it in 2 before it's gone more than 3 steps, kicking the parts out of her way. The door to the bridge is just beyond it. Obi-Wan flicks her fingers at it hopefully, but the blast doors are down, and the Force won't do anything against that without more energy than she really cares to expend. Instead, she stops, reaching for the Force, and thrusts her lightsaber into the door up to the hilt. She can feel the heat shearing off it as she slowly carves a hole in the blast doors, using the Force to help the resistance of the triple layers of Durasteel. If Dooku had ever considered that the Jedi might get this close to him, he would have added Cortosis in. Obi-Wan is glad he hadn't. Hole cut. She stands back and shoves with the Force, sending the sheared-off section spinning across the bridge. Droids shout and scatter in its wake, and Dooku turns around slowly, calling his lightsaber into his hand.
"Very impressive, Master Kenobi," he observes.
Obi-Wan points the lightsaber at him. "Count Dooku, you're under arrest in the name of the Jedi Council and the Galactic Republic for high treason and crimes against civilization." She doesn't pause as she slices a Magna Guard's head off, kicking a battle droid out of the way, and using the Force to fling 2 more against a wall, stunning them. "Will you come peacefully?" Outside the transparent steel windows, Obi-Wan can see Republic ships ringing the cruiser, the flashes of blaster fire as starfighters clash with vulture droids. She glances at the battle once, then turns her attention back to Dooku as she slices her way through 2 more Magna Guards, knocking aside their electro staffs and kicking one out of the way. Dooku ignites his lightsaber.
"Dare I ask what you've done with Score? I take it he's no longer among the living."
Obi-Wan brings Score's lightsaber up into the opening position for her favorite lightsaber form of Ceresu, blade held back in one hand, non-dominant hand out so that she can channel the Force through it. "Oh, he's alive," she says. "He's just not very happy."
Orders, sir?"
one of the remaining droids inquires timidly, cowering behind a control.
"Get us into hyperspace," Dooku snaps, not looking at it.
He and Obi-Wan move towards each other, stepping over droid parts.
"You cannot defeat me, Master Kenobi. We've ascertained this."
"I don't need to defeat you," Obi-Wan says, letting herself smile, a small, savage expression. Anakin would appreciate it. Qui-Gon wouldn't have. "I just need to keep you occupied until the rest of the Jedi get here."
"Do you?" Dooku says. "And I suppose the Jedi Council doesn't care about the second Sith Lord?"
"It's Supreme Chancellor Palpatine," Obi-Wan says. "Isn't it?" He blinks once. Slow.
"You're not as dull as I thought, Master Kenobi."
Obi-Wan just feels cold. She knows her history.
Few Sith Lords are content to watch and wait and manipulate from the sidelines the way that Palpatine has done. She has to get back to Coruscant so that they can warn the Council and remove him from power as quickly as possible.
But first, she has to do this. She feels the shift in the Force, the faint tremor along her skin, and isn't taken by surprise as Dooku uses the Force to fling the remnants of 3 battle droids at her. Obi-Wan throws them back at him, and uses the momentary confusion this causes, the remaining droids still in a state of some panic, to launch herself up into a smooth flip that covers the distance between them. Dooku's lightsaber arcs up to meet hers as she touches down, plasma hissing close enough that it singes the bottom of Obi-Wan's braid as she whirls around, snapping a kick against his knee that momentarily unbalances him before he counters her. Lightsabers crackle as Dooku slowly, inexorably, herds her the way he wants them both to go. Obi-Wan is younger and faster, but Dooku has height and reach on her. Not usually a problem when Obi-Wan has spent her entire life training with men bigger and stronger than she is. First with Qui-Gon, then with Anakin. But a definite disadvantage when she's wounded and tiring more quickly than usual. Worse, Dooku knows it. "You are a worthy opponent, Master Kenobi," he observes, sounding approving as Obi-Wan parries one of his strikes into a console, sending sparks flaring up between them. "If only you were at your prime. You've certainly improved since the last time we crossed blades." Obi-Wan snaps a kick up against his jaw and almost loses her foot for the trouble, parrying aside his lightsaber at the last second. "I've been training for this," she says.
Sir?
One of the few remaining droids interrupts tremulously.
"Two Jedi have just landed in the starboard hangar bay and..."
Its voice stops abruptly as it keels slowly over. At the same time, the other droids deactivate. Obi-Wan lets herself smile. Anakin's doing. Dooku takes advantage of her momentary distraction to hit a control that opens a hatch in the floor. He leaps down it, and Obi-Wan follows, bringing her lightsaber up just in time to block the lightning crackling off the tips of Dooku's fingers as he twists around. This sliding down a long, curving escape shaft. Of course Dooku has a bolt hole. Obi-Wan had expected nothing less. He always needs to have some way to slither out. "Qui-Gon told me you were stubborn," he remarks, as if they're in a training arena and not on a ship under siege. "It was one of the things he liked about you. But a Jedi needs to know when to let go." "Oh, something the Sith excel at, I'm sure," Obi-Wan shoots back. She sees light up ahead, the end of the shaft. Dooku hits the floor with both feet. Obi-Wan turns her descent into a mid-air roll, snapping her lightsaber downwards and having it deflected. She lands behind Dooku, taking in their location quickly. Portside hangar bay. She can see Dooku's solar sailor sloop waiting for him, alongside several deactivated battle droids, and three, unfortunately active, Magna Guards. Upon seeing Obi-Wan, these activate their electrostaffs and start towards her. She shoves them backwards with the Force, whirling into an attack on Dooku. He blocks every blow, sneering at her from behind the clashing red blades. "You're weak, Kenobi," he says, "and weakening with every minute that passes. Give up, give in, and join me." "Never!" She knocks his lightsaber aside, snapping a kick up into his jaw as she slides inside his guard, starting to reach for the syringe in her pocket, until a blast of Force energy knocks her backwards, Scorr's lightsaber flying out of her hand and deactivating when it hits the deck. Obi-Wan throws herself into a series of desperate backflips to avoid a barrage of blaster fire from the newly arrived pair of droidicas that apparently hadn't been hooked into the same central command as the others. Obi-Wan knows that had been a mistake as soon as she does it, feeling the new skin over the blaster wounds on her stomach stretch and tear. She lands in a graceless sprawl on the floor near the Magna Guards, which are stumbling upright, electrostaves whirling by her head. She rolls aside to avoid an electrostaff that jabs down at her, grabbing for the handle as she shoves the droid backwards with the Force and pulls the staff towards her, flipping to her feet and whirling the staff between her hands. Glancing quickly over her shoulder, she can see Dooku beating a hasty retreat to his ship and grabs for the Force, using it to toss two of the Magna Guards into their master. Dooku goes sprawling, the droids on top of him before he shoves them aside. Obi-Wan slams the electrostaff into the vulnerable chest of the remaining Magna Guard, sending it into convulsions that shake its entire body, then flips the electrostaff around to knock it in his knees, using the Force to burn out its wiring and leave it a useless pile of scrap metal on the floor. The droidicas are moving again, shields down as they roll towards her. Obi-Wan reaches out with her free hand and calls Scorr's lightsaber into it. She can feel the first tremors of exhaustion settling in, the after effects of pushing herself too hard and too fast while she's still healing, recovering from the kind of trance that takes energy away instead of restoring it. The throbbing pain on her torso where her wounds have broken open doesn't help. She knows she won't last much longer. So does Dooku. She tosses the electrostaff aside, settling into position with both hands on the hilt of her lightsaber.
Aren't you going to run away again, Count? What a Sith you'll make, Master Kenobi,
Dooku says, admiring. He tips his head at his remaining Magna Guards, the ones that Obi-Wan had thrown at him. Bring her alive.
The only relief that offers is that it means it will keep him here for a few more minutes.
Obi-Wan licks her lips, tasting her own blood where she must have cut herself on her teeth, and challenges.
Come and get me yourself, Dooku. A flicker of movement in the observatory platform above, and a tremor in the Force, warns her in the instant before the window explodes outwards with a terrific crash, shards of transparasteel raining down around them as Anakin vaults down, landing in a 3-point crouch with his lightsaber held out in one hand.
Didn't your mother ever tell you not to hit girls? He quips, rising smoothly. He unclips Obi-Wan's lightsaber from his belt and tosses it to her. She catches it and ignites it, a lightsaber in each hand now.
So the apprentice comes running to his master, Dooku says.
He flicks his fingers at the battle droids, turning away and starting up the gangway to his ship.
Another time, Obi-Wan.
Can you take care of this? Obi-Wan demands of Anakin, dragging up the last dregs of her strength.
Yes, catch!
She tosses Score's lightsaber at him and leaps. Clean. Beautiful. Qui-Gon would be proud.
Dooku meets her lightsaber thrust with one of his own, turning on the ramp to catch her in mid-air with the Force.
Obi-Wan gags and chokes, fumbling her free hand into her pocket as her lightsaber deactivates. It hits the deck with a clunk, the sound almost lost in the ear-piercing screech of two Jedi starfighters and a gunship skidding into the hangar.
Dooku glances at them, irritation briefly creasing his features before he throws Obi-Wan sideways through the hatch.
She lands on her back and flips herself onto her feet again, launching herself gracelessly at Dooku and tackling him back down the ramp.
Obi-Wan! She hears Anakin scream.
Not wise, Master Kenobi, Dooku says, punching her in the face.
Obi-Wan slams the hypodermic needle into his neck and depresses the plunger. You forgot wisdom when you left the Order, Dooku. Dooku goes white as the drug takes hold of him, but the shock only stalls him for a moment. He throws Obi-Wan off him, sending her tumbling into Anakin as Aayla Secura and Kit Fisto circle Dooku, their lightsabers extended, followed by a dozen clone troopers.
Count Dooku, you are under arrest, says Kit, as several clones drag Dooku up, slapping binders onto his wrists. Put him in a holding cell until we can transport him back to the cruiser.
He grins at Obi-Wan and Anakin as Aayla comes over to help them up.
Good job, you two. Hey, get a medic over here for General Kenobi.
Masters Voss, Galia, and Tholm are securing the rest of the ship, Anakin reports, helping Obi-Wan to a seat on the ramp.
Aayla holds Obi-Wan's lightsaber out to her.
Are you all right, Master Kenobi?
Better now, Obi-Wan says, taking it.
What took you all so long? She adds, and grins.
Chapter 7.
So we followed your tracking beacon here, after Adi, Aayla, and Tholm rendezvoused with the fleet.
Kit Fisto finishes, leaning against the holocom.
General Sweet Choi and several other masters were initially dispatched to cover the hyperspace routes to Lola Sayu, but when we picked up the signal, I believe they returned to their initial destinations.
What tracking beacon?
Obi-Wan blinks. Swathed in a Jedi cloak borrowed from Adi Gallia, she's a more familiar sight than she'd been in Civvies. Anakin finds that his gaze slides automatically away from her, instead of letting himself look the way he's been doing the past few days. They're Jedi again. He's not allowed either to look or to want.
Master Fisto cocks his head to one side curiously.
You didn't set it off.
Quinn? Obi-Wan starts, glancing across the room, but Voss is already shaking his head. Anakin, she adds, more certain. What did you do? I told you I was making the droid better, he says, tilting his head back to grin up at her. She just shakes her head, smiling back down at him. You're unbelievable.
You made a tracking beacon out of a cleaning droid?
Says Fisto's Padawan, a Mon Calamari named Nadar Veb. He blinks down at Anakin from the holocom, impressed.
One that worked in hyperspace? I didn't know that was possible.
Well, I didn't say it was easy, Anakin says, preening a little before he catches a faint hint of disapproval from Obi-Wan. Jedi aren't exactly supposed to be humble, but they're not supposed to be too proud either. Anakin frankly thinks a little pride is justified, but he's not going to say as much. He feels vindicated when Aayla Secura pulls herself out from beneath the nav consoles to say, I don't know anyone else in the Order who could have pulled that off. Good work, Skywalker. Thank you, Master Secura, Anakin says, leaning back against Obi-Wan's knee from his cross-legged seat on the floor. Obi-Wan's fight with Dooku has left the bridge mostly wrecked, except for a few cowering battle droids who had been dragged out and swiftly disposed of. But somewhat to Anakin's surprise, it's still fully functional. Master Secura and several of the clones had been occupied in fixing the worst of the damage and getting the hyperdrive back online. No use in wasting a good ship. Dooku's death won't end the war, but having a CIS battlecruiser on their side might help them get behind enemy lines to do some good old-fashioned sabotage, among other things that Anakin can think of. Aside from Adi Gallia, who's guarding Count Dooku down below, all seven Jedi on board the cruiser are up on the bridge here now. It's the kind of number that feels excessive for a single mission a year and a half into the war, though Anakin has to remind himself that he and Obi-Wan had been the objective of the mission, while Voss had been a wild card, so really it's just four Jedi who'd actually been sent out. Five, if you count Fisto's Padawan back on the Republic cruiser. It's still a large number, in a war where increasingly Jedi are only dispatched to battleground planets in ones and twos, because there are so many systems in conflict that the Order is hard-pressed to keep up. The Council probably wouldn't have spared so many if it wasn't for the chance to capture Count Dooku himself. Obi-Wan and Anakin alone aren't worth the risk and lives without tactical merit. It turns out that Quinlan Voss had been sent deep undercover to spy for the Jedi by the Council and his old master Tholm. Anakin is frankly of the opinion that going so deep undercover that your own side can't tell if you've really gone to the dark side or not is a risky way to fight a war, especially when it gets senators killed and Jedi hurt. But there's a reason he and Obi-Wan are usually assigned to combat or diplomacy, not intelligence. The Jedi Spymaster's tactics aren't ones he likes, but Tholm and his protégés seem fine with it. Voss and his former master are talking now, sitting on the floor in a relatively undamaged portion of the bridge. Aayla goes over to join them as Tholm beckons her over, leaving her toolkit on the floor. What about the Supreme Chancellor? Obi-Wan asks, carding her fingers through her loose hair before she starts separating it into strands to braid. Dooku as much as admitted he was the second Sith. Dooku lies, Voss snaps, glancing over at the sound of the Count's name. Dooku may lie, but you have to admit it makes sense, Obi-Wan says. Did you report my suspicions to the Council, Kit? Master Windu is taking care of it personally, Kit says, frowning at the holocom. He taps it with one long green finger. It's a grave charge, but you're right. It does make sense when you think about it. No, it doesn't, Anakin protests half-heartedly. It sounds like a separatist trick to tear the Republic apart further. I mean, for the love of... He's the Supreme Chancellor of the Republic. There are Jedi around him all the time. Surely we would know if a Dark Lord of the Sith was right there on Coruscant. Obi-Wan and Fisto trade meaningful looks over his head. Anakin glances up at the hollow image of Veb, and they exchange the more or less traditional shrug of, "Masters, they just don't understand." He suspects that it's identical to the gesture that Obi-Wan and Fisto are sharing, only upgraded to, "Padawans, they just don't understand." "Masters, it's crazy," Anakin tries again. "I've known Palpatine since I was a child. He's always been a good friend to me. He only wants what's best for the Republic. If he was a Sith, that would be utterly mad. Why would he..." "It's crazy."
"It's the kind of crazy only a Sith Lord would engage in,"
Thome remarks from the opposite side of the room. Once the option has been put on the table, it is rather disturbingly likely. And what Quinlan has just told me confirms that, as well as Obi-Wan's report about her interactions with Dooku. Though the Count's not talking now. Anakin scrubs his hands through his hair. "This is crazy," he repeats, hearing the dullness in his voice. "It doesn't make sense, except in all the ways it does." Obi-Wan strokes a hand over the back of his neck. "Be calm, my young apprentice," she says. "The truth will be discovered soon enough, and until we can contact Coruscant, there's nothing we can do about it. Have faith in Master Windu." Anakin closes his eyes, leaning back against Obi-Wan's hand. "Yes, Master," he says obediently. I just don't think it's very likely." "I know, my young Padawan." She glances up at Kit. "Why haven't we reported into the Council yet? Dooku's capture is the first real break we've gotten in this war." "I'm having some trouble getting through to Coruscant," Fisto admits, frowning at the holocom and tapping it again. Anakin starts to stand up. "Let me take a look at it." "No, it's functional," Fisto says, waving him back to his seat. "There's just no one on the other end." "Let me try reaching Master Yoda or Master Windu directly." He leans over the holocom again, then stops, his hand going to his forehead. Anakin feels it too, a heartbeat after Obi-Wan's sharp, indrawn breath. She doubles over with her hand pressed to her heart, her hair falling in loose waves around her face. Anakin scrambles up to put a hand on her back, feeling the sudden, yawning void in the Force, a darkness that threatens to consume all of them. Obi-Wan's shoulder is comfortingly warm against his palm as he says, "Master?" Hearing the panic in his own voice. "The living Force is screaming," she gasps. Thome, Aayla, and Voss are all on their feet. Even Veb looks shaken. His hands fall into his lightsaber.
"Master?"
he questions of Fisto. "A great disturbance in the Force," Thome says, leaning over his cane. "Dooku," Voss spits, clenching his lightsaber in his hand. "I'll gut him this time." Anakin glances across the bridge as a flicker of blue light catches his attention. Aayla's clone commander, who's just turned his palm over to activate the small handheld holocom attached to the control gauntlet on clone armor. The Force nudges Anakin toward him, an insistent whisper at the back of his mind. He leaves Obi-Wan behind and edges around the captain's chair, where Commander Bly won't see him. None of the other Jedi appear to notice his distraction. Behind him, he hears Veb say,
"What is it, Commander?"
and whirls at the sound of blaster fire. Fisto cries out as his Padawan falls, his lightsaber still on his belt in the instant before the holocom blinks out, leaving Fisto leaning on the console with horror chasing its way across his usually cheerful features. "Nadar!"
Execute Order 66,
says the figure in the palm of Commander Bly's hand.
It will be done, my lord, says Bly, pulling his blaster from his holster as the comm flickers out.
No! Anakin yells, grabbing with the Force and throwing Bly into the nearest wall.
Skywalker! Ayla shouts, jerking around. What are you—
Voss tackles her to the floor as Bly comes up shooting, the other clones on the bridge joining in. Anakin snatches his lightsaber off his belt as Obi-Wan ignites hers, parrying blaster bolts. There aren't many clones up here. For 6 Jedi, it's only a matter of seconds before they're all dead.
All except for Bly, whom Ayla and Voss pin to the floor, kicking his blaster away from him.
Kit, get to Addy, Obi-Wan warns, and the Natolan Jedi nods once and races off, his lightsaber bright in his hand. She and Anakin cross to the others. Thawm is leaning on his cane and crouching down in front of Bly, holding one hand out.
You want to tell us why you did this, he says, his voice thick with compulsion.
Orders, Bly chokes out. We were ordered to execute Order 66.
Anakin crouches down beside Thawm.
What's Order 66? He asks. Tell us.
Contingency Order 66, Bly recites. In the event of Jedi officers acting against the interests of the Republic, and after receiving specific orders verified as coming directly from the Supreme Commander, Gar commanders will remove those officers by lethal force, and command of the Gar will revert to the Supreme Commander until a new command structure is established.
Voss curses.
Who's the Supreme Commander?
The Supreme Chancellor, Obi-Wan says, looking ill. It's Chancellor Palpatine. The message must have been coded and verified as coming directly from him.
I heard him, Anakin says. You can check his holocom.
He breathes in, anger making him clench his fists. It was the Supreme Chancellor. It was Palpatine.
Ayla passes a hand over her face.
All this time we've served together, Bly.
Bly's comlink crackles.
CC-5052, can you confirm that Order 66 has been executed?
Another clone asks.
No!
Bly chokes out, before anyone can stop him.
Terminate the ship!
Voss slams his head into the deck, knocking him out, but it's too late. Through the observation window, Anakin can see the Republic cruisers turning their guns on the Sep dreadnought. He throws himself at the nearest working console, his fingers flying over the controls as he brings up the cruiser's partially intact shields.
Anakin, can we make the jump to hyperspace? Obi-Wan demands, leaning over his shoulder.
I don't... Nav computer is down, but lightspeed is operational.
The ship shakes with the first hit, throwing Obi-Wan forward against Anakin. She catches herself on the console, her hair falling into his face.
Then get us out of here, she orders. The rest of the fleet is coming around. We can't hold them off for long, even if we start shooting back. If we give them too long, they'll box us in so we can't make the jump to hyperspace.
Jump blind? Anakin demands, horrified. We could end up in a sun!
And they'll blow us to bits if we stay here much longer, Thawm snaps. Trust the Force, Skywalker, and jump.
Anakin swallows, reaching for the control.
It will be all right, Anakin, Obi-Wan says, her breath warm against his cheek as the ship shakes again.
Trust in the Force.
Yes, Master, Anakin says, reaching for the serenity of the Force, and pulls the handle down. He feels the third and fourth hits glance off the ship, but by then, they're gone. Anakin sinks back in his seat for a moment, breathing hard in relief that they haven't vaporized instantly, though that doesn't mean they won't in the next 10 minutes. He only gives himself that instant, though, before he turns toward the nav computer, which had only mostly been pulverized by someone's lightsaber, and starts trying to figure out how to reconstruct it. If he's working, If he is busy and his mind is elsewhere, then he doesn't have to think about the enormity of what must have happened. Thousands of Jedi in the galaxy serving with clone troopers on thousands of planets. Thousands of Jedi dead, murdered by their own troops. Without that second's warning from the Force, they might all be dead too. Commander feels dead, he hears Kit Fisto report, and glances up to see him helping Adi Gallia onto the bridge. Ayla goes to help her to a seat, calling the medkit over to her and pulling out a bacta patch. None of the other clones apparently received the command, but I'm ordering them to turn over their weapons until we know more. What did your commander say? Ayla and Thome explain what they know, while Voss manhandles Bly's limp body out of the bridge. Obi-Wan sits on the floor beside Anakin and passes him tools as he asks for them, both of them swearing when wires send sparks flying into their faces. Thanks a lot, Master, Anakin quips, because it's easier to joke than it is to think of what had happened. What's still happening, because he can feel the darkness in the Force, the maelstrom of pain and death and terror that scratches at him right behind the eyes when he thinks about it. I didn't exactly expect that we'd have to fly this thing out of here. Obi-Wan looks years older than she had 15 minutes ago. Anakin thinks that it will fade in time, as the shock wears off, but he has a sudden flash of what she'll look like in another 20 years, when her hair goes all silver instead of just a strand here and there, and a lifetime of service to the Republic takes its toll. Old and weather-worn, and still as strong as a mountain. Still beautiful. Anakin is momentarily grateful that the disturbance in the Force means that she probably hadn't picked up on that stray thought, then guilty for thinking it. Try turning the console on, he says to cover his blush, and Obi-Wan straightens up, her fingers flying over the keys. Anakin yelps as sparks explode in his face, then swears as he realizes that the end of his Padawan braid is on fire, swatting at it. Turn it off! Obi-Wan does, and Anakin drags himself out from beneath the console with a smell of burning hair. I can fix it, he says firmly, in reply to the look on her face. I didn't say anything, she protests. I wish R2 was here, he adds grumpily, leaning back against it. We'd have this fixed in no time by then. Obi-Wan kneels down in front of him, pulling her hair out of her face and tying it back with a band, so that it falls in a long red sweep over her shoulder. That's not a bad thought. I don't know why you're so fond of that droid in particular, but there are 4 astromechs here. The ones that came with Kit and the others. They've been busy fixing the engines. I don't know why I didn't think of that. Anakin scrubs a hand over his eyes. I don't know why I didn't either. I guess I'm just not thinking straight. Obi-Wan's mouth tightens. I don't think any of us are. She takes her borrowed comlink off her belt, clicking it on. Anakin listens to the sound of her voice, not the words. He knows more or less what she's saying, asking the starfighter astromechs to come up here and fix what will take Anakin hours, if not days. Master Windu's dead, isn't he? He says when she's finished, staring down at his hands. The council must have discovered that the Chancellor was lying, and they went to arrest him, and he was too powerful for them. He swipes a hand over his mouth, feeling sick. We don't know that for sure, Obi-Wan says. There isn't much hope in her voice. The clones didn't do it on their own. They don't think that way. And there was an order given. I heard it. I know the Chancellor's, Palpatine's. I know his voice. An approaching step makes him look up, his nerves thrumming, even though he already knows who it is.
As soon as we're out of hyperspace, we should contact Kamino, says Kit Fisto. He looks awful, his green skin tinged with gray, as if the tragedy in the Force has leached all the color from him. If it's in their programming, then it goes back to the cloners. Shock T is on Kamino overseeing clone trooper training. If she's still alive, then she'll be able to find out where this started. I've never been quite sure where the clone army came from in the first place. Master Sifo Dyas commissioned its creation more than 10 years ago, Obi-Wan says, glancing up. I have some familiarity with the subject. Then he must also have commissioned that they be programmed with that order, Fisto says. You and I both know it's suspicious. Sifo Dyas just happens to commission a clone army, then dies before he can tell the Council or the Senate about it. And just as we need them, the first batches are coming to full maturity. Didn't anyone ever look into this? There was an investigation, but at the time we needed the clone army too badly to look too closely into their origins. Obi-Wan scrubs a hand over her face. Jango Fett once told me that he'd never met Sifo Dyas. He was commissioned by someone else, but I can't remember who. There's something else going on here. Something elusive. I have a feeling... I have the same feeling, Fisto says. We've all been tricked. The clones, the war, Dooku... This was all a Sith trick to destroy the Jedi. Dooku was a true believer, Anakin says suddenly. He was evil, but he really believed in the Confederacy of Independent Systems. We thought that he was the one behind it all, but if he was just another pawn... He lets the words trail off at the look on Obi-Wan's face. Master? It was meant to start on Naboo, Obi-Wan says. That's why Darth Maul was there. Dooku can't have been a part of it then. He never would have ordered Qui-Gon's death. How can we all have been so blind? Because that's what the Sith do, Voss says. They lie, even to each other. They manipulate and destroy. And what do we do? Anakin asks. What if we're the last Jedi left in the galaxy? What do we do then? Obi-Wan grips his shoulder. We defend the galaxy. We defend the Republic. We fight until either the Sith are destroyed or we are. Even if we are the last of the Jedi, we are still Jedi. No Sith can take that from us. The end. Reader's Notes. Hey, this is Rena Jenkins. Thank you for listening, sticking around for the last 3.5 hours. Thank you to Bedlam's Bard for letting me play around in this universe, and I have plans to get back into the other two stories in this series. They're all fairly standalone, except that they're stories that happen to this particular version of Lady Obi-Wan. I had a lot of emotions. I spent a lot of time sort of in the middle of recording, like between chapters, thinking about Lady Obi-Wan and sexism and just all the ways that baby Obi-Wan in this universe might have tried so extra hard to be the perfect Jedi, because I have this sort of vaguely unspecified headcanon about baby Obi-Wan aging out, or about to age out, right? And none of the Masters want to take her. So the Council's like, oh, okay, go do this thing with taking care of things, because girls are good at that. So, you know, when she finally does become a Jedi Padawan, she's very much like, I have to do all the things better than everybody else to prove that I'm supposed to be here, but with that undercurrent of, well, I guess, or you could be doing girl things. I don't know. It's just sort of her knee-jerk reaction to being a Jedi would be to be the most Jedi to overcome her own inner whatever. Which just, it shows up in that bit where I mean, I am all for, like, the dirty bed rung, as evidenced by my so many years of Supernatural, Sam and Dean, and, like, sort of the older person, you know, you're taking advantage of the younger one because you really care about that. It's not a healthy thing, I'm aware of that, but, like, I'm weak for the dirty bed wrong of here's the master, there is the Padawan, now we do the sexy times. But Obi-Wan's conviction here, or her strength of character, and like, no, I'm going to stick to my principles. I am in a position of authority over you, and we are not going to go to a porn place because as much as, you know, you mean something to me, Anakin, the Jedi code that I have devoted my life to means even more. And then there's that whole reconciliation in her that was just... it was so good for me. Because it could have gone very easily to a dirty bed wrong, very in place for me, and I would have liked it. But this was so good, too. And it was just highlighting that strength of character. Which, Bedlam's Born, thank you for giving me this really great character to roll around with. Also, the cover art for this podfic is the scene from Chapter 6, where Obi-Wan, oh jeez, I kept fucking doing that, Window, Master Window, and Count Dooku, no, it was just, I kept saying Isla Sakura instead of Ayla Sakura, and that was fucking annoying to have to go redo that. Anyway, names in this universe are just so dumb. But the scene in Chapter 6 where Obi-Wan is running around with Scores lightsaber through the halls, and just around the corner are all the droids that she's about to dismember on her way to fighting Dooku. So I found one of those doll makers where it's like, make your character, make your OC. And so I stuck her in the outfit from the beginning that Dooku's like, I'm gonna be your dirty grandpa. Because he is, technically, right? It's Dooku, Qui-Gon, Obi-Wan. So he's her Jedi grandpa. Which means that if Qui-Gon had lived, Asajj Ventress would have been his evil stepsister. So Ventress is kind of like Obi-Wan's evil aunt. Which is great and super awkward with all the flirting that happens there. Where was I? Oh, yes. So the cover art was one of those doll makers. I had a lot of fun with that. Basically being like, here is Femme Obi-Wan in Jedi robes. Here is Femme Obi-Wan in... Oh, she has left the senatorial residence in Padme's outfit. I wonder why. No, we're not having an affair, Anakin. I'm just borrowing her outfit. Because walk of shame. Except Obi-Wan's totally not shameful about that because she's awesome. Made like 6 or 7 of those because Femme Obi-Wan was a lot of fun to play with. And yeah, these are super unhelpful author's notes. I do love the idea of if Order 66 happens earlier, then, you know, we get to keep some more of my favorite characters alive, which I kind of felt was like, yes, good. And then, you know, if in the future Anakin grows up and he's an adult and Obi-Wan grows up and she's an adult and they need to have another generation of Jedi. Babies. Baby Jedi. I don't know where this universe was going, but that was where my brain jumped because obviously babies, that's the future of everything. Yeah, I had a really good time with this, and at this point I think I'm just talking to see the little ticker go in GarageBand. But yes, thank you for listening. If you have any more Obi-Wan Anakin stories that you want to throw my way, or excellent Femme Obi-Wan stories that you want to throw my way, I am more than happy to talk to you about that. And thank you for listening. I'm glad you thought this was worth your while. I hope you enjoyed it, and have a nice day.